I am very grateful to be with you in this very holy place of New Dwarka. Our beloved Guru Maharaj, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, on this very seat, gave many hundreds of lectures and talks and guided thousands and thousands of lives. And to this day, that divine grace is sustaining, encouraging, and protecting us. It is a very holy place for all of his followers. And I'm so grateful to all of you for coming today. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna himself, who came just 500 years ago to teach us by his example how to follow his own teachings. Srila Prabhupada explained it in this way, that 5,000 years ago Lord Krishna appeared within this world and gave us the Bhagavad Gita, which culminates in Sarva Dharman Parityajya, or Sharanagati, the principle of surrendering one's ego in the loving service of the Lord. But then in order to teach further, that same Lord appeared in the role of a devotee to teach us by his example. Real spiritual life, whatever the philosophy, whatever the ritual, its purpose is a transformation of the heart. To transform arrogance to humility, greed into generosity, envy into compassion, hate into love, selfishness into a desire to selflessly serve. In the 12th century, there was a great saint. His name was Ramanujacharya. He lived to about 125 years old. And during his life, he established such a powerful presence, especially in the southern parts of India. And even today, he has hundreds of millions of followers. And many of the most magnificent temples in the world. His successor, his name was Parasara. I'd like to say something about him in regard to our topic tonight. When Parasara was 5 years old, he was living in a holy place called Srirangam. That was the high seat of learning and spiritual education for the whole of India. In those days, the greatest competitive sport that captivated people's minds was debate. If you put together basketball, baseball, football, hockey, soccer, and for you Indians, even cricket. Put them all together, and you have the enthusiasm back in those days for debate. It was a different culture. It wasn't just about physical strength or speed, it was about mental strength and speed. So there was an undefeated champion scholar of debate. wherever he had such an incredible intellect that he could smash to pieces anybody's arguments. He was known throughout the lands as someone who could answer any question that was answered to him. He was very proud. He made a lot of money. He got an incredible amount of fame. And he would go town to town being carried on a magnificent palanquin held by four men. And there were horses riding, decorated, elephants, bands playing, Brahmins chanting mantras. That is how he would enter into every town, proclaiming, "The great Digvijay Pandit has come." So he came to Sri Rangam. And all the great scholars and all the great pundits, they all hid in fear of this man. As his followers were screaming out, "He challenges everybody or anybody to a debate. There is no question that he cannot answer." So little 5-year-old Parasara, he goes running alongside the palanquin and says, sir, I have a question. I challenge you with a question." The man looked at him with disdain. He said, "Debate is not for little children. This is serious. Go play with your friends. He said, no, I have a question for you. Please, I want to challenge you." So the palanquin stopped. He said, "You are a little child. You should be sucking the milk from your mother's breast, not coming before the greatest champion scholar in the world." The little boy said, "Why are you so hung up on my size? I have a question. I have a challenge." "So what is your question?" The little boy reached down and picked up a handful of sand and said, "Please tell me, sir, how many grains of sand are in my hand?" He was speechless. The great scholar, for the first time in his entire life, he was stunned. He had no idea how many grains of sand were in that boy's hand, and nobody ever dared to ask a question like that. They were always scriptural and philosophical and logical and argumentative. And as everyone was looking on, the man couldn't say a word. And then little Parasara told him that the whole purpose of education and knowledge is to bring about good character in a person. Just like a tree, if it has no fruits, it keeps its head up very high. But a tree that has many fruits is always bowing down. Similarly, a person who has really good qualities, good character, is always eager to bow her or his head down to others in respect and honor. My dear sir, if all your knowledge and all your education and all your debate has made you so proud and arrogant, thinking yourself so much better than others, then I declare that all your knowledge is as worthless as this handful of sand." And he threw the sand on the ground. 5-year-old boy. The scholar got down from his palanquin and bowed his head at the feet of this child and said, "You are my guru. Please instruct me. Now I realize that I know nothing." Years went by and Parasara became the successor of Ramanuja. He was a very great, powerful spiritual teacher. And one of his disciples approached him and asked him a question that was burning in his heart. "Please tell me, What are the qualities of a true devotee of the Lord? A real bhakta. And here is Parasara. He has millions of followers. But he was so humble. He said, actually, I can't properly answer that question. If you really want to get the best answer, you should go to a holy place called Tirupati. And living on top of that mountain there is a saint named Ananta. You should ask him, and he will give you the best answer. Now, in this is in the 12th century, 1100s. There were no trains or planes or buses. If you wanted to go, you walked. It was about 400 miles. He walked through dense, dangerous forests where he had to just sleep on the ground. There were no guest houses or hotels in the forests in those days. There were lions and tigers and leopards and cobras and monkeys and mosquitoes. And he walked through forest after forest. He crossed rivers. And then when he finally got near, there were seven huge mountains he had to climb. And finally, he came to the top where he met the great sage Ananta. And Ananta, he was just living a very simple life in those days. The Tirupati Hill was a very lonely place. And Ananta would do gardening. He would grow flowers for Balaji. That was his life, along with his wife. So Ananta gave him nice prasad, gave him a simple but nice place to stay. And then that man asked, I was sent by Parasarabhatta all the way from Srirangam to ask you a question. What is your question? What are the qualities of a true devotee? Ananta said, let me think about it and I'll answer you at a later time. So he patiently waited. But he didn't just wait. He did seva, menial service. He did cleaning, he did gardening, he did plowing, he did so many washing things. And he went to the different classes that Ananta was giving. And he did his puja, he did his sadhana. And most of his day was just doing little services. A week went by, a month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 6 months went by, and Ananta never addressed his question. But he just patiently kept waiting and waiting, still waiting, never complained, just served. And one day Ananta invited so many thousands of people to a big, big annual festival. And there was a feast. So this student, he volunteered to serve the prasad for the feast, the spiritual food. And he served and he served and everybody had. And then he sat down to eat hours later. And Ananta saw him. He said, there's another batch of people coming. You should serve them, then eat after that. So he put aside his plate and he started serving again and again and served everybody there. Then he sat down to eat, and Ananta happened to walk by. He said, there's another batch of people coming. Serve them. He served batch after batch after batch, didn't get a morsel of food. Now it's the middle of the night, and in this field, he's all alone. Everyone's gone. He sat down to eat. Just when he was about to eat, Ananta comes up to him again. Now there's nobody else for him to serve. And Ananta said, if I remember right, about 6 months ago, you asked me a question. What was your question? Oh, Gurudeva, my question. He was waiting all this time just to get the answer to this question. He said, what are the qualities of a true devotee of the Lord? Ananda smiled. He said, a true devotee is like salt. A true devotee is like a chicken. A true devotee is like a crane. And a true devotee is like you. That's all. And he walked away. This man was thinking, I waited 6 months. I traveled all this distance and risked my life. I did all the seva for that. That was the answer. That's all. So he packed his little bag and he walked down the seven mountains, went through the jungles, crossed the rivers, 400 miles, came back to Sri Rangam, and he happened to see Parasara. And Parasara was very blissful. Oh, you are back after so long. Did the great sage Ananda answer your question? He said, yes, he did. Oh, he did. Please tell me, what was the answer? He said, he told me that a true devotee is like salt. Salt? It's like a chicken? It's like a crane? And like me? When Parasara heard this, he clapped his hand. He said, perfect answer, absolutely perfect, precise, comprehensive answer to your question. According to Guru Sadhu Shastra, according to the highest logic and scriptural evidence, beautiful answer. The man said, I am bewildered. I am confused. What does salt and chickens have to do with true devotees? He said, I risked my life walking 800 miles through jungles and forests and washing pots for 6 months. What does it mean? And Parasara said, I will tell you the depth of the wisdom of Ananta. A true devotee is like salt. Now, before I continue, how many of you were ever praised by saying you were like salt? If someone came up to you and said, you are like salt. Or if somebody said, you are chicken. It's just not the way you usually praise people. He said, a true devotee is like salt. What are the qualities of salt? If you put too much salt in a preparation, it's ruined. If you put too little salt in a preparation, it's tasteless. But if you put just the right amount of salt in a preparation, it's perfect. There must be balance. In the same way, a true devotee is balanced, is not fanatical, and is not lethargic. In the Bhagavad Gita, it explains that a true devotee does not sleep too much or too little, does not eat too much or too little, is balanced in their recreation, in their work, in everything. For people who are in family life, we have an occupation, we have responsibilities to family, responsibilities to society. We also have responsibilities to God through our spiritual practice. And if this is imbalanced, then everything goes wrong. Real intelligence in our spiritual life is very much about how we can balance ourselves. It's so easy to either become fanatical about what we believe or to really not believe anything, to take it all for granted. But like salt, a devotee is in harmony. the body, the mind, the soul, God, environment, and other people is balanced in harmony. Another quality of salt is that salt gives so much flavor to a preparation, but nobody even recognizes it. It's like if somebody makes a nice vegetable preparation for you, you may say, this has incredible spices, and this is very, very nice, the way it's the ghee and the spices and the grains or the vegetables. But for you cooks, how many people have said about your preparation, the salt in this is fantastic? Raise your hand if anyone has ever said like that. No, nobody notices the salt, but the salt does everything. So similarly, a devotee is willing to do everything, but does not demand or expect praise or credit, but rather is happy giving the praise and credit to others. The salt makes it so that everything else, the vegetable is praised, and the cook is praised, and everything else is praised except the salt. Amanina manadena, Lord Chaitanya said, to offer all respect to others and not demand it for oneself. Our happiness is simply in our service, in our love, and in seeing others honored. Srila Prabhupada, he many times he says, this is the definition of a Vaishnava. One who is not envious. How much we are truly Vaishnavas, we can kind of evaluate ourselves. The Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, you can understand this message because you have no envy. One who takes great pleasure, adosha darshi, one who takes great pleasure in seeing other people being blessed, in seeing other people being uplifted, in seeing other people succeeding, that is the sign of one who loves God. Not one who tries to push others down to put oneself up. Like salt. The salt makes everything else taste good, and make everything else noticeable, and is happy just to be in the background. Another quality of salt is the salt completely dissolves itself to give flavor to the preparation. It merges into the food. And in the same way, a true devotee, is absorbed. Absorbs body, mind, words, life in offering loving service to Lord, to Guru, to the Vaishnavas, and to other living beings, like salt. We become lost in love. No ego. The student said, he was amazed to hear that explanation. He said, but what about a chicken? How is a true devotee like a chicken? You know, when we want these athletic teams, sometimes they're called the Bears or the Lions or the Tigers. But did you ever hear of an athletic team called the Chickens? The Culver City Chickens. How is a true devotee like a chicken? And Parasara said, the quality of a chicken is if there's a rubbish bin and the rubbish is all over the ground, the chicken will collect only the very nutritious seeds and eat them and leave everything else aside. Saragrahi. A true devotee is always seeking the essence of every situation and not concerned with all the other stuff around it. To see the good qualities in others. When we focus on seeing the good qualities in other people, we become nourished by those good qualities. When we focus on the faults in other people, what's actually happening is we are being influenced, affected, and contaminated by their faults. Because we're deeply associating with their faults by focusing our consciousness and talking about it. Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, it describes in Chaitanya Charitamrita that he simply wanted to hear and speak about the good qualities of others. And if anybody criticized, he would say, I don't want to hear. It doesn't make any difference. He's part and parcel, or she's part and parcel of Krishna. And they're doing some service for Krishna. That's good. Let us water that seed of goodness in them. And our beloved Srila Prabhupada, I don't want to compare him to a chicken, but in this essential principle, that's how he showed such grace upon us. Madhudvista Prabhu, he was there in the very beginning days. And, you know, he could speak for days and months and years about Srila Prabhupada's quality of seeing the good in others. Here he was coming from Vrindavan, the holiest of all holy places. Great scholar, Paramhamsa, pure devotee of the Lord, living by the highest moral, ethical, and spiritual principles. And he was living on the Lower East Side of New York City and then in Haight-Ashbury on Frederick Street in San Francisco. And the kinds of people that were coming in his little storefront, they were not like the Goswamis of Vrindavan. There were people coming in totally crazed out by LSD, eating cows, proponents of free sex everywhere, anywhere, anytime, anyhow. Some of them hadn't bathed in years. And they all had, some of them, very strange philosophies. Swamiji, I am God. Srila Prabhupada, just the fact that they came into his storefront was such a good quality that nothing else really mattered. Yes? If somebody just liked prasad, if they were atheists who were totally immoral from religious principles perspective, if the person just liked prasad, Prabhupada would just love that person and appreciate, he likes prasad. Wonderful. Take some more. He would see the seed of potential good in everyone and focus on that and water it. Sometimes philosophically he would be very discriminate and he would, what is the truth and what is not the truth? What is favorable for devotional service and what is unfavorable? But when practically applied to people, how he lifted people to actually understand and realize that by appreciating whatever speck of good was in them and magnifying it. If there was a little spark, he would fan it to become a fire, and then all the bad qualities in that person would burn in that fire. One time they asked Prabhupada, what is our qualification to get this very, very highest knowledge? And Srila Prabhupada, with great humility, he said, you had no qualifications. I made your qualifications. What does that mean? He just saw the good and knew if I just encourage and appreciate and fan that little spark of potential within that person, then it could lift them up. And once they're lifted up, then they actually have the strength to overcome their vices. Saragrahi, seeking the essence. And that can also be held, it could also be applied, this chicken theory, to circumstances that come before us in this world. True wisdom is to see the positive opportunity in every situation in the world, to transform curses into blessings by just seeing the opportunity. And we find that many of the greatest people in all fields throughout the world, when they were in situations where ordinary people would just become depressed or give up, they saw a positive opportunity and did something incredible in that situation. Srila Prabhupada, we're using him as an example. He was in the Bowery. He came all the way to America to do something good. On the boat, he had heart attacks. He had seasickness. He had no money. He ended up in the Bowery, which in that time was the most infamous ghetto of America, practically. A skid row with homeless, drug addicts, drunkards, alcoholics. That's what the Bowery was known for. And he was living there in a little loft. You know, one time he went out and somebody broke in and stole everything he had, his typewriter, his manuscripts. And he kept getting telegrams from India and letters saying, just come back, it's useless, you can't do it. Just come back and live happily with us. And then he met one boy who seemed a little interested, and Prabhupada lived with him in a loft, and then that boy was on LSD, and he thought Prabhupada stole his soap or something, and he threatened to kill Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was out on the street. Why didn't he go back? He was just seeing the opportunities in every situation. Positive opportunities. And then Mukunda Goswami Maharaj helped him to get this little storefront at 22nd Avenue because he felt sorry for him. Because Prabhupada was homeless, he had nothing. And really, the only other place for Prabhupada to live was in Mukunda and Janaki's house. They were Mike and Jan. And they were not devotees yet, so they didn't want Swamiji living in their house with them. It was just a little flat. So they had to get him a storefront. It's all in this beautiful book, Miracle on 2nd Avenue, that just came out. And then here he is. And we'll arrange this, but we don't know how we're going to get the money for the next month's rent. And one day Prabhupada was walking down Houston Street, and our dear beloved Samba Prabhu's father was walking down the street, Howard Wheeler, and he happened to see Prabhupada. And he ran up to him and said, are you from India? And Prabhupada said, are you from India? He couldn't understand that. And Prabhupada said, come, let me show you my storefront. And he, this little run-down place, said, why don't you bring your friends and come here? I'm giving classes. And he became Hayagriva Prabhu. Prabhupada saw the goodness everywhere. He saw the hope, the potential, the opportunity. And he asks Hayagriva, what do you do? He says, I'm a professor of English. And Prabhupada said, would you be able to edit some papers for me? And Hayagriva Prabhu said, yes, I'd be honored to. So he said, come to my room. He was expecting a few pages. Prabhupada brought out from a trunk a stack of papers this big, this high, about 1,000 pages at least, and was all tied with ropes. And he said, you could start with this. Then he opened some trunks, and there were thousands and thousands of other stacks bound with ropes. So yes, Saragrahi means to seek the essence of whatever comes. Even trauma, even crisis, even injustices, to see that there is a potential to find God, to find a way to grow in that situation. The Bible says, seek and ye shall find. If we're looking for that, we'll find it. If we're looking for a reason to complain, we'll find it. If we're looking for reasons to criticize, there will be 1,000 justifications. If we're looking for the opportunity to grow and see the positive opportunity, we'll find it. And this chicken theory can also be applied to religion, especially in today's world. I gave a class some years ago in India. College classes in India can be very, very exciting because you can really get challenged. And this man stood up and said, everything you're saying is nonsense. If we want peace in the world, we have to outlaw all religion. The Muslims and Hindus are killing each other. The Hindus and the Muslims are killing each other. And the Hindus and the Buddhists are killing each other. And the Christians and the Muslims are killing each other. And the Jews and the Muslims are killing each other. And the Catholics and the Protestants are killing each other. And in America, everyone's killing each other. This is our reputation. The Sikhs are fighting with the Hindus and the... so many things. The Shiites and the Sunnis. So just abolish religion, then there's some hope for peace within this world. In the Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, Krishna tells that all the purposes of small ponds are served by a great reservoir of water. And similarly, all the purposes of the religions, spirituality, all the purposes of all the scriptures are served by one who understands the purpose behind them. And in this case, Srila Prabhupada would quote from Srimad Bhagavatam. Savai pungshang paro dharmo yato bhaktir hokshajaya hoitaki apratihata yayatma suprasediti. The supreme dharma, dharma means religion, dharma means occupation, dharma means the purpose of life. The supreme religion, dharma, is that which brings about loving devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Such loving service must be unmotivated by any selfish interest and uninterrupted by any impediment that may come before us in order for that devotion to actually satisfy the heart. Selfless, humble, loving service. That is the essence, the purpose. Bible says, love God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. And the Srimad Bhagavatam brings that to the highest crescendo of the ecstatic love of God, of the gopis for Krishna in the highest abode of Goloka. It is that unmotivated love that is the essence. Is that what we want? Or are we doing our sadhana or our service because we want some fame or distinction or some facility? Nadanam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmanishwari bhavatvad bhakti rahoi tikitvai. Lord Chaitanya taught us in this verse the essence. I do not want wealth. I do not want the opposite sex or sex whatever way people do. I do not want wealth, or I don't want followers. I don't even want liberation from suffering. I simply want to serve you, my Lord, with love, unconditionally, forever. That is the essence. Parasara told his student, a chicken is like that, always seeking the essence. What about a crane? Parasara said, the crane stands on one leg in a lake of water and looks down, and all little fish are passing by, and he just patiently watches, watches, watches. Then when there's a big fish, sorry about that. He eats the big fish. Doesn't pay any interest to the small fish. Now, it doesn't mean a true devotee eats fish. Some people in Bengal may try to interpret it that way. It means, like the crane, we're not distracted by small things. We keep our mind focused on the goal. I was recently at Princeton University, and I gave a lecture with Dr. Cornell West. And he said something that I'd like to repeat, and I think he's very happy that I'm repeating. The name of the lecture was East Meets West. God, love, spiritual activism, from a Christian and Hindu perspective. And 800 students of Princeton came. And he represented the West, since his name is Cornell West. And I represented the East, since I'm a Swami. And it was very sweet. He's a Baptist. I'm a Vaishnava. But from the very moment we met, we could understand that we had so many things in common that we could share. And in the talk, one of the things he said in front of all these students and professors, he said, America is being conquered by the escalation of weapons of mass destruction. Weapons of mass destruction are only created by people who have been conquered by weapons of mass distraction. There's just so many things to distract us, petty things. We're chanting God's names, and there's so many petty thoughts that come to our mind. But like the crane, we just focus it on what's really important, what will really nourish us. There's so many things that happen in life. Temptations, fears. Real integrity is to be like that crane and fix our minds on our goal. And then Parasara said, and a true devotee is like you, because you went there and asked a question. And you had such an earnest desire to know. You waited with patience for 6 months in order to achieve spiritual progress. There must be enthusiasm and patience. Rupa Goswami explains these are symptoms of sharanagati or surrender. If we're just patient, we don't get anywhere. If we're just enthusiastic, if we don't get what we want soon, we give up. So enthusiasm and patience, the harmony between the two, is surrender. Well, we'll be enthusiastic, and if we understand the value, prema bhakti, ecstatic love for Krishna, what a goal that is. If it takes my whole life, it's a small price. We go to school for 20 years to get a PhD, and then we don't even know if we'll get a job. And here is eternal life in the spiritual world, the ecstasy of love of God and seeing every living being as part of God, an instrument of God's compassion in everything we do. We can't take it cheaply. So you were patient. You waited. You carried on with your service month after month after month with eagerness. That eagerness is so critical. The heart is like a field. Bhakti is like a seed that is within the heart. If the heart is soft and fertile through our humility, through our willingness to forgive others, through our patience, then it is a fertile field. And when we live by moral and ethical principles, it's like protecting that seed from the weeds that will grow along it. And then our spiritual practices, hearing about the Lord, chanting the names of the Lord, serving the Lord, associating with saintly people, puja, prayer. This is the water that makes the seed grow. When the seed grows, it becomes a tree and it ultimately bears the fruit of prema, of love, that satisfies all our desires. So yes, you were willing to travel over 800 miles barefoot, round trip, through forests, through jungles, risking everything. And then when you were there, you patiently waited and you served. That last day, you served everyone. Then you served everyone else. Then you served everyone else and everyone else until everybody was served. And then, selfless service. Then you were willing to take whatever was left. That service attitude is the quality of a true devotee. Just like you. And the student said, now I understand. And Parasara said, Ananda is so kind to me. He could have explained all of these things to you himself. But he only spoke it in codes so that I could have the opportunity to explain it to you and gain the great benefits of his teachings. In one talk, Srila Prabhupada said, philosophy without good character is useless. And this is what every devotee is striving for. Through the philosophy, through the sadhana, to actually develop the character of devotion, selfless service, so that we could actually chant the names of the Lord in such a way that Radha Krishna will be kind to reciprocate with their blessings, the ultimate perfection of life. And this is the simple culture of bhakti through which we come together to harmonize our hearts while chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Hare. No one told me what time we're supposed to end, so I feel justified if I'm over time. Does anyone know what time we're supposed to end? Whenever you like. Would you like to have kirtan? Would you like to dance? Please dance. There's a harmonium. Thank you very, very much. Gayatri Devi Hariva. Namah Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Kauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschatyate Satharine. Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gopakta Bhunda. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna.